I'm the marketing director at Kickstarter. My team is responsible for all user acquisition, retention, and content marketing. So we do email, we do advertising, and so forth. And we are a two-sided market. We have people who create projects and ask for money, and then we have people who give money to projects. My team makes sure that at any given point, there are enough quality projects and enough people who value the values of those projects. And we'll go into that a lot more. In addition to that, I teach undergrad at New York University. I teach two semester courses in their Bachelor's of Science in Marketing. One is social media, and the other one is web analytics. Really love it because I get to work with the same students on the brand side of marketing as well as the analytical side. And then I teach at General Assembly and so forth and so forth. This is my dog. She has an Instagram account. She was actually just on a Swiffer commercial because an agency reached out to her Instagram account. So dreams do come true. So I want to start off with this. I want to start off with a quick one-minute exercise. We have the black box that is your property. Your property is like your website, your app, your software, whatever you own, and you are ingesting the data that is the user behavior. And throughout this process, we have users initiating sessions on your property. So we have five, from Facebook, then Twitter, so this is in chronological order. And finally, this one individual person who has come from five channels to your property eventually converts for a $100 transaction. I want you to tell me, so not verbally, we're gonna do this thing called fist to five. I want you to tell me which of these gets the credit for the $100 conversion. So fist to five means you put your hand in the air, and depending on which of these you think was best and intentionally ambiguous, give me a one finger, two, three, four, or five. Make sense? All right, so please put your hand up before the timer hits zero. We see maybe a percent of the room. Okay, okay. Getting a lot of... Oh, this is super interesting. Okay. A little bit more. We have some passive attendees. That's fine, you're cool too. We get it. So we have really a lot of Facebook and then a lot of Pinterest and Instagram. We will revisit this model a little bit later. I just want to kind of warm you up in this way. But there are some fundamental issues in tracking conversions and tracking performance, and part of it is attribution, and the other one is conceptually, how do you decide what is best, and how do you decide where to give credit? Not only using technology, but within your own business practice. So we'll explore these things. And I think the main problem statement here when measuring social media performance, really marketing performance overall, is that we make educated guesses. Sometimes we have a whole bunch of data and we were still like, my gut says this thing. Or we don't have any data and we're like, we have very few sets of data and we're like, all right, well, we have likes, so let's just make a decision based on that. Regardless of that, there is such a big picture that's missing from both of those statements. And again, the best. I still hear this for some reason. I don't understand when a manager is like, can you just make the best campaign, a better campaign, do more of this? And we'll get past that. So I don't actually watch a lot of South Park, but I love this example. And when I did watch South Park, there's this episode called The Underpants Gnomes. The boys in this town, they find out that all the underpants in the entire town are disappearing, so they investigate. They're these little detectives, and they go to this underground cavern and find out there are gnomes that just steal underpants all day and night, and they confront them. They're like, why are you doing this? And this is South Park's way of making fun of startups and business models, so the underpants gnomes present this business model. Phase one, we will collect underpants, and phase three, we will make a profit. And there's nothing in between. So the way that I translate that for us is that, all right, we might make this beautiful campaign and then drive traffic back to that black box that is our property, our proprietary data, where we control that experience. But then, okay, I would assume we know whether or not we're making money, but where is it coming from? Is it from the campaign? How influential is that campaign? And there's no simple answer to it. And I think the first thing we need to do is really actually just assess the relationship between these siblings, data and brand, and actually combine them together. It doesn't need to be the same team or the same person, but the practices and the disciplines are a converging Venn diagram, and we can't avoid it. I also just love the Brady Bunch. So here are my solutions. And we're gonna walk through these five step by step throughout this session. So my solutions are, one, objective first. Just like, why are you doing this? And what do you want to measure? How many of you have been in a meeting where before the campaign, you're like, all right, great. This is either a transactional campaign or perhaps this is a branded campaign. 1, 2, 3 months later, you're discussing the results and you're talking about a completely different objective or result that wasn't your initial like plan. Sound right? And so I think that setting objectives and KPIs up front, yeah, super basic, but it eliminates bickering later and helps you move a little more nimbly. After that, align measurement against the user journey stages, especially with social media where you aren't necessarily just talking to someone who has never heard of your brand before, and you're not only talking to people who have like transacted, and it's a retention strategy. It's this hodgepodge of all of them together. So the user journey, I think, is becoming more and more important, and aligning measurement there is crucial to actually understanding what has and has not performed well. Segmenting by user behavior, we'll go into that. Aggregating all performance data in central dashboard. We use a whole bunch of tools. I'm going to walk you through some. You'll see a bunch of redacted information. It's going to look like an FBI doc a little bit, but it'll drive the point across. And then finally, closing out with attribution modeling and that first exercise that we did together. So Kickstarter. Does anyone know what a public benefit corporation is? Brave soul, anyone? Kickstarter is a public benefit corporation. So we are for profit, but every single year are held accountable to drive the creative practice forward. So 5% of our entire revenue every single year goes towards arts nonprofits. And if our shareholders think we overvalue revenue, then we're in trouble. So we actually aren't held to revenue metrics when reporting to our shareholders. We are held to a qualitative metric of driving the creative practice forward and helping bring creative projects to life. It's important framework for the rest of the stuff I'm going to talk about. Yeah, I've literally been told, John, maybe you should bring less revenue metrics to meetings. And I was like, okay, this will be... It was a culture shock to me. So we've been really successful. We've been around for 9 years and profitable for all 9 years. We have hundreds of thousands of creators who start these projects and they evangelize the platform themselves. We've had Spike Lee, we've had Zach Braff, these bigger names like Pebble as well. But then we also have this long tail of so many projects that raise $200, $300, and that has cumulatively added up to $3.6 billion of money that has been successfully delivered to individuals on the platform, and with 14.5 million backers, 45 million pledges overall. So revenue metrics, we take 5% of that, and then 5% of that 5% goes to arts nonprofits every single year. I mention that because this is definitely a two-sided market. It's really expensive to get people to take heavy actions. My team's responsibility is getting people to start projects. To start a Kickstarter project, this is the first screen, by the way, so we need to fix the experience a little bit. It's like, oh, you're interested in creativity, and then bam, you have to add an image, a funding goal, and more, so specific, rewards, shipping costs, your description, a full video, and confirm your identity by linking your bank account. So for us, it's quite a process, but this is our goal. My team brings in new creators, and then educates them to bring in their own backers to offset that duality within their platform. So how do we actually go about doing it? Our objective is to get as many new projects to site. So we call it started projects. And when we are optimizing for it, every platform asks us for our objectives first. So all these platforms are objective first. And it's the benefit of doing it within the social platform or within the advertising platform is that it optimizes for the actual objective that you are specifying, whether it's brand awareness. If you've used this before, then you are only allowed to optimize for CPM. If you wanted to optimize for CPC or landing pages, then you have to choose traffic. If you wanted to optimize for payments, you have to choose conversions. So these platforms are forcing you into the box. Where I see a lot of organizations fall flat is that they forget that you also need to set this up within your own events database or your analytics tool. So this is just a screenshot of the free demo account for Google Analytics. If you have never used Google Analytics before or you don't feel as savvy about it, Google does have a full free account with real data in there. It's pristinely set up and it's great for you to use. So It's like, all right, make sure that screen one and screen two are aligned in the objectives. There's so many clients that I take on, I'm like, all right, great. So you're running a conversion campaign through Facebook, and then we go to their actual web analytics, and all of a sudden we can't measure it at all. So we're trusting just one platform. And secondly, we notice that the results don't necessarily line up, and we'll go into that a little bit too. So just making sure that your objectives and your KPIs actually match up together. Second is aligning measurement against a user journey stage. So user journey here to me is just making the relationship with your actual user, potentially like a potential customer. So there's this one model I am enamored by. It's the Harvard Business Review customer decision model, and the reason why I love it is because it isn't just linear. I think that the sales funnel is a little outdated nowadays because, especially with social, you have people taking actions with you over and over and over and over again, and you're not just driving them to a specific point of action and then kind of like forgetting about them. And it's not just two triangles stacked on top of each other. So what this does is what this model does is it shows there's an outer loop where people are kind of getting to know you. This is like the beginning of the dating phase. I met my fiance before Tinder existed, but we were on OkCupid. Does anyone here use Tinder? You don't have to say. So just give like a passive nod if you're like, I get the whole dating scene. So there's the outer loop. Think of it this way, consideration and evaluation. Evaluation is like when you are shopping for shoes and you have 40 tabs open. You know maybe one, two, three features that matter most to you. So in dating, it's like, I know these three qualities must be like tall, handsome, and smart. Just kidding. Consideration, however, and this is one of my favorite parts of this entire model. Consideration is more like consideration of the industry or the topic. So it's, should I date at all? So if you are like new to the dating market and you're trying to figure out your whole life here and which platform you should use, considering Tinder versus OkCupid versus all the rest of them is evaluation. However, whether or not you feel compelled to be in the dating game is a consideration phase. And then only afterwards, and perhaps going on so many dates and having positive experiences, are you like, I'm only ever gonna use Tinder. Tinder's just like the bomb. I'm gonna advocate for it, and I'm gonna bond with it over and over and over again. So what does that actually look like? Who knows what this is? It's like three blocks away, so you totally should. Yeah. So if we think about consideration and evaluation here, I would say evaluation competitors for the Art Institute of Chicago, it's like museum campus. It's all of the other museums that are around. Like, which one are you going to actually go to? Consideration, though. So can anyone here name the consideration? If you're thinking about going to, like, see art as a whole, what are the other competitors to the Art Institute? Which I think it's actually their bigger competitors. MCA, maybe. I'm going to go a little higher level than that. Hulu, Netflix. The goal is to get people off of their asses first. If they don't get off their asses, they're never going to go to an art museum. If they don't understand the value of art, they're not going to do that either. So actually, I ripped this from the chief digital officer of the Met in New York City. They have whole campaigns that optimize against Hulu and Netflix. And the value is about getting, I mean, they don't say getting off your ass, but they're pretty much saying, like, get off your ass and then get outside so we can start doing this with you. So built out a little bit further, this is what it looks like. I have heard of it. I understand the importance of art and getting off my butt. And then after that, which one should I go to? And then I'm really, really closely considering and evaluating all the individual choices. Pausing here for a second, how do we actually measure these differently? Think back to that screenshot of just the Facebook advertisement. They know that this model works. They know that models like this work as well, so that's why you have the awareness objectives, you have the traffic objectives, and the engagement objectives, and then you have the conversion objectives. It's actually built out for these individual components. And going to the conceptually as well as the technological issues, conceptually, I don't think that we understand that we're running an awareness campaign that we shouldn't hold it to conversion standards. Conversely, I don't think that we run a conversion campaign, and we're like, well, why doesn't it have a whole bunch of likes? Well, perhaps the engagement and likes happen here, the reach happens here, and the conversions happen here. And we need to, as marketers, strategically segment our campaigns along this outer loop and the inner loop to then fully not bicker about it when the campaign is over. In addition to that, I am obsessed with Google Analytics, but it's not like my main thing. Another screenshot of Google Analytics behavior flow allows you to find really amazing bottlenecks within the user journey, and you can then segment and you can make cohorts based on the types of users. So if you use campaign tags like UTM codes really well, you can tag the campaign specific to each part of that outer funnel and then measure their behavior throughout the Google Analytics behavior flow, which shows from screen to screen, what are they actually doing? Are they spending time on the blog posts related to the topic? Are they looking at conversion pages but not actually converting? Because then you can create a segment and retarget, make an abandoned cart campaign, and all of it flows together, but with the correct framework and the correct technology, starting with the objectives within the platform, the objectives and goals within your analytics, and then conceptually structuring them well. So here's how we do it. Again, it takes up to 5 years for a new creator to actually launch a project. So my sales cycle is like pretty long. And that's fine. That is totally fine with me. So we kind of have like a growth marketing model. I generate millions and millions and millions of email addresses, and then we use content marketing automation flows to slowly get them to understand creativity is a practice. I can practice creativity, and then my practice needs money for longevity. And I'll have a couple concrete examples right here. So we will start off with some videos. And I created this presentation actually after having a meeting about the ad performance. Ran it on Twitter and Pinterest, and we ran it on YouTube bumper ads. So here, they're like, well, these videos didn't generate any money for us. And I was like, well, that wasn't really the point. So what we actually did is I took all the videos, and then I created retargeting audiences based on how people engage with them. If someone commented or shared, they'd be put into a strong affinity cohort that would be retargeted. If someone watched 10 seconds of the video, they'd be put into a strong affinity cohort. And what we did is that we wanted to measure prospect quality, so brand affinity there, and we made sure that the three main value props of Kickstarter are stated within the first 10 seconds. So it's not precise science, but within the first 10 seconds, if they have watched it, and we're assuming that they actually have, then they know us enough to be hit with a harder CTA. So this is where we're progressing people around that outer loop. So here's one example. This is Julia Nunes. She is a musician, originally a YouTube artist, and since then has launched on Kickstarter.
I am Julia Nunes. I'm a musician and a songwriter, and I make videos on YouTube. I had gotten to the point where I had enough songs that I really liked that I wanted to hear bigger than what I was capable of by myself. And that is when I looked at Kickstarter for the first time. I've done 3 Kickstarters. We've raised over $270,000. I think of it like my record label. You can make it as big or as small as your people want it to be. Any other route, there's like a middleman between you and the people who listen to your music.
And if they made it to the end, they'd get a different message as well. So this is my second of 2 examples because we have 12 categories where we're trying to get creators. So this is an arts category.
I've been making things out of felt since I was about 8 years old. For any kid, like it would be a starter fabric to use. But now I just take it to extremes. If I was going to make sort of a big splash in the art world, it needed to be something that people couldn't ignore. Well, number one, I didn't have the money to do it, so someone suggested to me crowdfunding. I didn't know anything about it. All I Googled was how to make a good Kickstarter video. It suddenly opened these doors to people from all over the world. You get out of it what you put in. It might take 10 years, it might take 15 years, but when it does happen, it will 100% be worth it.
So think of yourself from the person who just watched it, but like a Kickstarter, like potential Kickstarter creator. And then if we had more time, I would have you dissect the video. At what durational points do you feel like you're more likely to convert and actually progress through that laundry list of crap they have to do to actually start a project? That's what my team has to think about every day. What kind of content do we deliver to people based on their actual characteristics, but in a very cost-effective way? We take 4.95% of, our revenue is 4.95% of every pledge. So our ad budget actually kind of looks like a nonprofit, to be honest. So how do we actually then automate? Because I'm not going to sit there all day with millions of people and just like retarget them by hand. We use this platform called Simon Data. There are so many platforms just like it. I like Simon specifically because they have great customer support. And yes, it's a value prop for me as marketing director. So what we've done with Simon is it's really, really simple SQL queries. They're if-then statements. And all Simon sits on top of your entire database and then also plugs into the databases of the third parties. So like Facebook, our ESP, we use SendGrid. And we also use MailChimp for like some accounts and stuff like that. So all that data is coming in and Simon is matching it together. So based on what the people are doing, it automatically sends them different ad campaigns. So for example, if we have like 10 newsletters that go out, and let's assume that someone just is subscribed to all 10 newsletters. If the user ends up clicking on music category three times over the previous week, then it will automatically suppress them from next week's sends and then put them into a retargeting audience for being a creator in the music category. Really simple stuff, but it works effectively for us. The conversion rates increased astronomically once we started doing stuff like this. It's a no-brainer. It's just people are giving you data that tells you what they're interested in, and then it's your moral obligation as a marketer to respect that, treat them with dignity, and send them the messages that they are telling you to send them. So what we actually do is we have a bunch of retargeting segments based on what people do in our emails, on our site, because it plugs into that, and within all of our social posts. And then we send them educational content about where they're blocked in that entire process. So if they've uploaded a video but haven't uploaded rewards, we've segmented off free content about, there should be one about rewards here somewhere. And it retargets them to see if they use it. So pretty simple stuff, really powerful platform. It plugs into really everything that you're doing. So it sits on top of our Amazon Redshift. And then Google Analytics, we use Google Tag Manager, so that's free. And then all of our social platforms and ESPs, those are free because Simon does the context storage, and then Simon itself is an enterprise tool. This is not like a sales pitch for Simon, by the way. It kind of sounded like that. They're great, but there are so many other platforms just like it. All right, so then segmenting measurable user behavior. I think I mentioned I have a fiance. I'm very proud, very happy. Woo! All right, so she was like, sorry, I was like, hey, you know, like these wedding cakes, it's kind of like user segmentation. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, we're tasting wedding cakes right now. So it is like a tiered approach, though. So the foundation of segmentation, I think, is still like demographic and geographic information because it expresses their individual values. However, it's real basic, and because that kind of targeting is highly oversaturated, it's really expensive. There's a premium if you're only going to target like 18 to 24-year-olds, because that's what you've heard you should do. So you need a layer on top of it. In addition to that, you have the behavioral and psychographic information. So what are they actually buying? What are they clicking? What are they spending time doing? And then finally, placement and devices. So I've been harping a little bit more about this lately because especially with this Facebook thing, everyone's like, what are we going to do without the newsfeed? I'm like, well, if you had been optimizing off of the newsfeed, which you should have been doing anyway, then you wouldn't be freaking out at this moment. And I started thinking about social media marketing as like the world and oceans and continents. And it really seems like we've been treating Facebook as like the Pacific Ocean and everyone's fishing there. But there are so many other places, even within Facebook. You have Messenger, you have WhatsApp, you have Instagram, you have Stories, and so forth. So diversifying the actual placements where users would want to see the information is something that you should consider. And it goes into two kinds of mentalities that link back to this. People are always like, well, why would I advertise, let's say, Right Rail or something? Actually, Right Rail is horrible. Why would I advertise in Facebook News? We know that there isn't a high conversion rate there. Perhaps it is the beginning of the outer loop, and that's why. So these placements should be aligned with that outer loop and the inner loop and the different placements there as well. It's cost effective, it's also super efficient. So how do we actually get the behavior and the insights? Free native platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and so forth. So this will disappear in about 5 months because Facebook's severing ties with Epsilon. So Epsilon, Axiom, and the other places that give us all the financial habits of users. So audience insights in Facebook. I use Facebook as a main example just because they drive the industry, and most other native analytics platforms like Twitter are just copycats of this. Sorry if you work for Twitter in here. But it's like a lot of the same technology and UX. So I use this as an example of all native audience insights. Here's some things that I've gleaned from one of my specific campaigns that I'm running right now. It's like, all right, well, they're single, in a relationship, engaged, married. You have what technology they're using, and like devices, as well as household income. We talked a little bit about placements and devices, but these two are important to me psychologically because depending on someone's disposable income level, you can talk to them completely differently. Think about the Art Institute of Chicago. If someone's disposable income and they're trying to figure out what vacation should I go on, you would talk to them differently if their disposable income was like, can I still pay for my Amazon Prime account? The entire narrative shifts. So I think that here's one piece of segmentation that is often missing in this. Second is married, so commitments. What are the commitments of the people who you are talking to? Are they watching the video while holding a baby? Or are they like me, watching the video while holding a beer? Two different messages and ways that you talk to the people because it changes their environment as well. So it's low-hanging fruit, but often overlooked. Great, right on time. And then aggregate all performance data into a central dashboard. So the issue with actually measuring things is this idea of proprietary data, and all the organizations, plus way more on this screen, they own their data, and they allow us as clients and as customers certain aspects of it, but ultimately they only give us what they feel comfortable giving us. So proprietary, we own all the information on our apps, on our websites, but we don't own all the information on our Facebook account, even though it is technically one of our like own channels. So what we actually need to do is aggregate all of the stuff together. That's what we do. We use a third party called Looker. I've used it at General Assembly. I've used it at multiple organizations, actually. There are other ones like called Domo, but all these things do is that they use advanced SQL queries to pull data through APIs into a single dashboard. Tableau does stuff like this as well, but their niche is more so visualization in that sense. So we use Looker, and it takes information from all these places and puts them into one so I can cross-analyze as well as work with a little bit stronger attribution. So my question to you is, even though we're pulling in all the information here, how do we know it's the same person? It's a fundamental issue. There's no million-dollar answer, by the way. It's like a trillion-dollar answer. So if you find it, let me know. We'll start a company. We have mobile device. That's one thing. Mobile device ID. Every single device in this room has a unique ID, and we can tie that together if you are capturing it in your own events database. Second is cookies. So GDPR on May 25th will eliminate a lot of this. So sorry that this will only last for another like 29 days. But cookie tracking also helps with that kind of stuff. And then finally, the holy grail is if you have users who are signed in, which is just a whole other level of marketing, then you unlock an amazing amount of information about them. So the user session begins. We showed you those five channels that go into your black box. The user session begins, the cookie is dropped, the small text file. It's anonymized, but it holds a whole bunch of information about what they do on your own site, and then platforms can match them together based on the referring data. So they go to Facebook, they come back to your platform, same cookie, and you're putting the stuff together. They're signed into your platform, going to Facebook, Twitter, coming back, and then you're also associating with email address and device ID as well. So we need to marry it together with those three main things. And this is kind of what it looks like. This is a dashboard I use to look at my advertising efforts. So I already told you my KPIs and my objectives. We have launched projects as well as successful projects. Based on our content marketing, our email, our social, and everything, how are these metrics actually being formed? And we'll see by category, so these are actually subcategories for product design. It does an aggregate of every single source. And then below, there's a breakdown of it as well. Really magical stuff that has been game-changing for us. And then all of that pumps into Simon Data, which analyzes and segments for us. So it also has an AI component and functionality. It takes all of that data, what is and is not performing well, and then it creates new segments for us in addition to the ones that I showed you. And that's how our machine works. It's input and output, but we've just very cleverly defined both the input and output for what matters most to us with the objectives and KPIs, matching it with creative that we think works really well for all of those users. So finally, and then we'll do Q&A, multiple attribution models. Simon, again, helps with all this kind of stuff. Oh, there we go. So back to this, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram. We have so many issues with attribution. One of them is cookie. So the cookie is dropped on the user's browser. We have something that's called cross-device attribution issues. So if a user goes to kickstarter.com from a mobile device, and then later it's like, oh, you know, I want to go to a desktop device and go to Kickstarter, actually counted as two unique users, two unique visitors, or two new visitors. It's usually problematic because then this entire thing is fractured. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, I don't necessarily know. I don't necessarily know if it's the right person. Facebook has a solve for this, but it's a view through metric, and that's another part of the attribution. You have click attribution versus view attributions. A view through metric is when a user sees your post, does not click it, but then goes to your site later and converts. Facebook Pixel picks up the same cookie and matches it to the user who actually had the impression of the post. To me, it's like a weak metric, though, because just because they saw it, and who knows if they saw it, they could have just scrolled really quickly through it, doesn't mean that it influenced the actual decision for it. So two things we've already identified. You have cross-device and you have view versus click attribution. So regardless of what finger you held up here, it's there's no million-dollar answer. So what we need to layer on top of those, what kind of credit do we want to assign based on our own values? So there's something called last click attribution. That's what Google Analytics and most platforms actually default to. The last referring source actually gets 100% of the credit. And in this situation, Instagram would be attributed $100 and be like, yay, Instagram. And the other four would get zero. Problematic for anyone who is a channel owner of these other channels. Great for anyone who's owning Instagram here. What it says to us as analysts is that if we did not post on Instagram, the conversion would have never happened, and that's why Instagram is the single most important attribution source. Converse, and this is actually what we do historically at Kickstarter, we have first touch attribution. So it's the first referring source within the user's journey. That gets 100% of the credit. So if we did not post on Facebook, they would have never heard about us. It's an awareness attribution model. So we don't really care about Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, or Instagram because we just need to get more people to be aware of us. Both of them are super important. What you need to do is constantly cross-analyze across attribution models. So direct traffic, when someone just types in a URL into the bar and hits enter, usually gets last click attribution because the user knows about you. But when you analyze it against first touch, direct traffic usually attribution to it decreases because no one wakes up and knows your brand's URL. I mean, some people may. It might mean Hershey, maybe. But definitely not Kickstarter. So in addition to that, what I do is I use position-based and linear attribution, and I roll it up in a quarterly aggregate. Because what it does to me is it gives me weighted averages. It takes the total quantity of touch points and just gives an equal weight to all of them. And then I can roll that up and actually see the percent influence of each channel over time. So let's say that someone clicked in from Facebook four times, and then so it would actually get 50% of that one conversion cycle. And we just add that up over time. As I'm allocating resources, budgeting, headcount, all that kind of stuff to our marketing, marketing program, it's really important for me to understand which of these channels is actually bringing in the most started projects and successful projects, and then beneath it all, the revenue. And this is how we do it. Google Analytics does it for you. I've like really just beat the dead horse with Google Analytics, so let's go to Q&A. We have 5 minutes for Q&A. When you say can't afford custom attribution, what do you mean? You can always create it yourself, even for free within Google Analytics. They allow for free custom attribution modeling, but it does take like a heftier data scientist to actually do it correctly within there, because they're like, here's a free tool. We're just assuming you know how to use it. Yeah. I think that's the bigger barrier. Google Analytics does allow you to do custom attribution for free. You can make up to 8 free custom attribution models. But if you're using like Looker or that kind of stuff, you need to be able to afford the enterprise tool. And I think Looker is something like, depending on your level, it's like $100,000 to $200,000 a year. The free tools and the good tools, there's really nothing in between right now. So if you invent that as well, let me know. We'll go start a company. There's a huge need for it. Well, it depends on what level you want to measure that. Because the front end metrics on LinkedIn, first of all, you can go, if you have a rep, they'll give you a CSV with that data. They just are going through things. Yeah, the data exists. So I think you have to spend more than like $20,000 a month to get an account rep. So if you are doing that, great. Your account rep should be able to send you a CSV. That's actually how they used to do it in like the olden days. Their query just must be broken, to be honest. But it definitely exists because they capture it themselves. And that account rep has access to it. The account rep is like, I don't know how to do this. Just like email me. I will yell at them. The second thing is that you should always marry it back to your own data as well. So if you do get the referring information, I don't know if any of you have looked against the front end and what I'm just considering the back end metrics, like your Google Analytics, your events database, usually don't match up that well anyway, because LinkedIn has a much smaller amount of PII, personal identifiable information, than Google Analytics does. Because you sign into Gmail, they capture your browsing history. So even the gender information is pretty good on LinkedIn, but it's I would always double check that against your events database as well, too. But just ask them for a CSV. We'll give it to you. All right, last question. It really depends on the category. Again, we have so many different categories, and if you're doing a design and tech project, you actually need to find a manufacturer and make a manufacturing plan. So that process takes a really long time. And then for a documentary, it takes about 2 years. So documentary takes about 2 years. Design and tech project takes over a year. And then an arts project or a comics project might take like 7 days. So it really depends on that. And that's why I need to segment so heavily based on all these things. Yeah. Gender, geography also make big differences for us. So we, on average, run tests to, we have about 1,700 personas, and each of those has about 1,000 tests running to them at any given time. So testing, 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 whole bunch of it.